When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. We've all heard the Miranda warning a million times. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. We take that for granted. But as recently as the 1960s, that wasn't the case. You were guaranteed an attorney if you committed a federal crime and faced charges in federal court. But if you were up against the state, it was up to that state whether or not they had a law on the books that would guarantee you counsel. It was a landmark case in 1963 Florida that changed that. Gideon versus Wainwright. Sometime between midnight and 8 a.m. on June 3rd, 1961, the Bay Harbor Pool Room in Panama City, Florida, was burgled. The burglar broke the door, broke the cigarette machine, broke the record player, stole the cash from a register, and bolted. Later that day, a witness told police they had seen Clarence Earl Gideon leaving the pool room at 5:30 a.m. with a wine bottle and money in his pockets. Based on this witness account and nothing else, Gideon was brought in and charged with breaking and entering with intent to commit petty larceny. Gideon was too poor to afford counsel, so he appeared in court alone and asked for assistance. The court denied him because the law at that time only guaranteed counsel for capital offenses in Florida. So Gideon had to be his own lawyer, and shocker, he lost, received a 5-year sentence, and his appeal eventually got kicked up to the Supreme Court, who voted unanimously in his favor. It's thanks to Gideon that we all now enjoy the right to counsel.
Welcome back to KRTC Talk Radio. We have a public defender on the line calling about the Keith Montgomery trial. Hello, Mr. Kesner.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm calling in because I'm growing increasingly uncomfortable with what I'm seeing.
Why is that?
There's no evidence. I'm not seeing anything of value presented in this trial. I'm seeing emotion and an evidentiary vacuum.
As a defense attorney yourself, what would be your legal strategy?
I can't speak to that without knowing all the facts, but I'm not sure how much of a defense should be required when there's this little amount of evidence. Keith Montgomery's lawyer is a public defender like I am, and we just don't have the resources or the time to investigate and hire experts our clients deserve.
Do you know Ms. Penn, Keith's defense attorney?
Not personally. She works in Leon County and I work in Volusia County, but the challenges are the same for public defenders nationwide. The United States spends less on public defense as a percentage per capita than every single European nation.
Really?
Really. 80% of defendants here cannot afford lawyers. 80%. Yet public defenders' budgets are a fraction of state prosecutors. Since public defenders became mandatory in every state, the prison population has gone up tenfold. We have all the responsibility and none of the tools. We are fighting a losing battle. In 2007, total spending by state prosecutors' offices exceeded that of public defender offices by nearly $3.5 billion. And in 2008, for every dollar spent on public defense, taxpayers spent nearly $14 on corrections. I'll repeat, 80% of defendants can't hire private lawyers. And why should they? If someone enjoys the presumption of innocence under our laws, why do we demand they be financially crippled?
Well, we don't. That's why we have public defenders.
Yes, that is the theory, but not the reality. The reality is public defenders are continuously tied by increasing caseloads and decreasing budgets. I believe in what I do, and I work damn hard for each and every one of my clients. But an inescapable reality of my profession is that if you want a defense that can offer you the time, energy, and resources every charge deserves, you need to hire private counsel.
Then why do you think Keith Montgomery did not attain private counsel?
I don't know. Maybe because he can't afford it, or maybe because he thinks he doesn't need it because he's innocent. But innocent or guilty, I'll say this much to anyone listening. If you are charged with a crime if at all possible, borrow money. Go into debt. It's an ugly truth, and a truth I battle every day, but being accused in America is expensive.
The term victim blaming was coined by a psychologist named William Ryan in 1971. It refers to the questioning of a victim's behavior, actions, history. What victim blaming does culturally is make a woman responsible for taking steps to prevent her own rape. However, when a defense attorney questions a victim's behavior, actions, history, inside a courtroom in which their own client enjoys the presumption of innocence, what is that? It isn't victim blaming. It is every defendant's constitutional right to confront their accuser. But that doesn't always make it comfortable. We hear, and research shows, that women who come forward with accusations of rape are frequently disbelieved, and this is a common hurdle for victims to overcome. However, contrarily, when a person is accused of sexual misconduct, how quickly is he or she stigmatized? How commonly are their accounts blindly believed? What repercussions do they face having been only accused? When two people are disagreeing and offering vastly different accounts of one event, the people caught in the middle, friends, family, law enforcement, the state, the public, will search for clarity in whatever manner they can. Maybe that's why the possibility of genuine lie detection is so appealing. Detective Suarez employed statement analysis, the lie detection methodology, to Keith Montgomery's statement to authorities.
Let's continue walking through your analysis, Detective. Okay, the suspect continues. Riley was a good friend. I texted some folks, but I didn't make plans. Firstly, I noted he said, was a good friend, past tense. Past tense indicates the friendship was over. Why? And did the friendship end before this encounter or since this encounter? When he said he texted some folks but didn't make plans, when is he talking about? Whom is he talking about? The placement of this information occurs after he said he arrived at Riley's. Was he talking and considering plans after this time? Or did he jump back in the narrative? The portion is odd and vague. I made a note to look into this.
Thank you. And what's next?
The next sentence is, I went to Riley's and bought the bottle because I thought we could have a drink. I just wanted to see a good friend. This is the second time the author announces he arrived at Riley's. This is a problem. When a person repeats himself, it's often a sign he's not reciting from memory. A truthful person's narrative flows easily and chronologically. When repetition occurs, it might be a sign the author is stalling because they don't want to get to the critical part of the narrative. In any event, it's sensitive because it's not consistent with the standard of a veracious statement. I also noted a missing pronoun before brought the bottle, indicating it's possible the author didn't want to assume responsibility for having done so. He says, I just wanted to see a good friend. Just is minimizing language. The word just in verbal analysis is always sensitive. Saying, I went to the store is different than saying, I just went to the store. When a person says just, they're intentionally minimizing the importance of the action they're describing. The question is why? When Keith says, I just wanted to see a good friend, it sounds like he's minimizing the importance of why he went over there. A stronger sentence would have been, I wanted to see a good friend.
I see. Thank you. Please begin the next paragraph starting with, I got to Riley's.
Yes. I got to Riley's and she invited me in and was very nice. This is the third time the author states he arrived at Riley's. Extreme sensitivity noted. Quote, she invited me in and was very nice. Slight sensitivity noted with the missing pronoun. Who or what was very nice? He goes on, she poured us drinks, maybe three. Again, the liar's number. And the second time it's appearing in the suspect's statement. And was really warm and started coming on to me. This missing pronoun is more troublesome. The author is reluctant to state directly that Riley came on to him. It's also unclear what's meant by warm. Is this referring to her manner or level of intoxication? Keith then states, she thought now that this had happened with Lila, she and I could be together. The word thought is underlined because possible deception is indicated. The author isn't a mind reader, therefore he can't know what she was thinking. In statement analysis, we don't infer. We take things at face value. When mentioning Lila, he uses the word with, indicating distance, and when mentioning Riley, he says, she and I. In this context of fighting with Lila and considering Riley a good friend, this may make sense.
What's next?
So we're on the couch, and she's flirting and basically wants to start things up. This is when the author switches to present tense. It is, of course, noted.
What is the significance of tense in statement analysis?
Truthful narratives always occur in first-person singular past tense. When a person is reciting a series of events, it makes sense he should speak in past tense. These events have already occurred. However, when a switch to present tense occurs, it's a deviation. It's a sign the narrative's no longer coming from memory. It's a sign the author is making things up in that moment. Changes in tense should always be noted in statement analysis. In this sentence, the author also says she wants to start things up. Again, an author shouldn't be telling us what other people think or want. The only way the author would know Riley wanted this is if she told him so. And this doesn't appear in the statement. We don't infer. He goes on, she starts coming on to me, and you know, Riley and I always had a good time. We're still in present tense, and I flagged the words, you know. This is persuasive language. The author's trying to convince us of something. He says, you know. Well, no, we don't. Know what? By stating Riley and I always had a good time, Keith departs from the timeline. Again, sensitivity indicated. His next sentence, being so nice and everything, is a fragmented sentence. It's odd and it's vague. Who's being nice? What is everything? I wanted to follow up here.
What does Mr. Montgomery state next?
When she grabbed me and kissed me, I was concerned because I don't know how this will impact things with Lila. Okay, let me explain something about emotions and statement analysis. There are two kinds of emotions. There are short-term emotions and there are long-term emotions. Short-term emotions are momentary and fleeting. Being startled, for example, is a short-term emotion. Shock, fear, worry, these are long-term emotions. If someone jumps out at you on a dark street, you wouldn't say you were in shock. You would say you're startled. When an author uses a long-term emotion when a short-term emotion is more appropriate, or vice versa, deception is indicated. Here the author writes, Riley grabbed him and kissed him, and he was concerned. Concern suggests time to consider, to contemplate. Concern is not a momentary or fleeting emotion. I flagged it. Keith goes on, but she wants it, so you know, flagged. We hooked up. We is the correct pronoun if the act was consensual, but we don't know what the act was because hooked up is vague language. He goes on, I just, minimizing, wanted to have a nice time with, distance, her. I actually think we had a really nice time. The word actually indicates a comparison between two thoughts. If someone says, what are you doing tonight? And you say, I was actually thinking of going to a movie. This suggests you were contemplating one or more other activities, but decided to actually go to the movies. When the author says he actually thinks they had a really nice time, he may be comparing that to the idea of something oppositional, perhaps the idea that one of them didn't have a nice time. This sentence, actually, presented many flags. I actually, comparison, think, noncommittal, we had a really persuasive nice time.
Thank you, Ms. Suarez. The next sentence Keith writes is, I left a note on her car the next day asking her not to tell people about her hookup. But you added notation before the sentence. Why?
Because there's missing time. He goes from having a nice time to leaving a note on her car the following day. Why skip over that time? There's a lot of valuable information there that's being withheld. What happened after the physical encounter? What happened the rest of the night? How did Riley behave after their good time? We investigators need to explore this. Also, this is the second time the suspect used the term hook up. I wanted to know whether this was part of his personal dictionary or whether this was minimizing language.
What is personal dictionary?
Everyone has language and colloquialisms that are specific to them. We call this one's personal dictionary. If the author uses the term hookup regularly in his day-to-day life, the fact that he uses it in the statement doesn't mean anything. However, without knowing that, it's possible the author is using the term hookup to minimize the physical activity that actually occurred.
Thank you for explaining that. Please continue. We're almost through the statement.
I didn't want to screw things up with distance, Lila, and that. Again, distance. The word this indicates closeness. The word that indicates distance. In this instance, the suspect is distancing himself from the physical encounter. Didn't make me look good. I honestly thought everything was cool. The word honestly is extraneous and persuasive. Flagged. The word thought is noncommittal. Flagged. He goes on. I really thought everything was cool. Again, persuasive, noncommittal, vague, also repetitive. He goes on. So I just left the note to make sure, and that was it. Just is, again, minimizing why he left the note. To make sure is flagged. To make sure what? That was it is flagged. What was it? Is this his way of concluding the story? Since we can't infer that, it needs to be clarified.
Thank you, Ms. Suarez. You've given us a lot to think about. That was the entirety of your annotations, but you've included a conclusion at the end, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I typically include a conclusion with an overview of areas I believe we should focus on. It helps me stay organized.
Can you please read your conclusion for us?
Of course. Conclusion. The following needs to be investigated and clarified. 1. What did the suspect do while walking around after leaving Lila? 2. Since sensitivity was noted regarding substances, how much alcohol was consumed? Were other substances consumed? 3. Whom else did the suspect write to before or during his visitation at Riley's? What was discussed? Examine content of suspect's phone. 4. Consistent, noncommittal, and vague language regarding the events in Riley's apartment beg the need to revisit the incident in its entirety. Suggest walking Keith through moment to moment and gaining more detail. 5. Discover what the suspect did following the physical encounter with Riley. What happened before he left her apartment? What happened after he left her apartment? What occurred during the hours between leaving her apartment and leaving her note? I ended by stating, possible deception indicated.
Does it ever seem to you like the things that make it hardest for us to get to yoga class, like busy schedules and expense and commuting, are the things that make us need yoga more than anything? With Yoga Glow, it doesn't matter where you need to be or why you can't make it, because Yoga Glow gives you online access to awesome yoga classes that you can do on your own time, anywhere you want, even in your pajamas. I've been doing Yoga Glow for a few weeks, and it's allowed me to do more yoga and more meditation than I've ever managed before. It's really user-friendly, really versatile with thousands of classes, and really affordable at $18 a month for unlimited access. Whether you're after more flexibility or better breathing or calm or fitness, all of the options are present in Yoga Glow. And instead of making it to a studio, this way you can do it right as you wake up or in the 15 minutes of time you have after you finish your coffee before you have to leave. You can do it from your desk at work or your conference room or your living room, wherever you are, wherever you're free. You can use that time and inclination to work on yourself. If you're interested and want to help out the show, get your first 2 weeks of Yoga Glow free when you sign up for yogaglow.com/deliberations. That's yogaglow.com/deliberations for 2 weeks free.
Was this testimony compelling?
Yes.
It explains so much. It really helps me to understand something that just like, something feels wrong, and then there's actual things explained that help you understand that weird feeling that you're not so sure of.
But didn't they also say don't go with your gut?
Yeah.
So it's kind of contradictory or something.
But it isn't. It's just explaining things in a way that makes much more sense.
But if they say don't go with your gut, that means that maybe half the time we misinterpret.
Well, they've got a lexicon. They've got a vocabulary of things that, you know, raise a flag. That flag is not a definitive thing, but it is, this was suspect. And then they give a scientific or they give a logical explanation mm-hmm. for why. So that's mm-hmm. not a gut reaction. That's not an inference.
Well, I didn't understand I feel like it wasn't clearly logically explained, all of her little, when she was breaking every little thing down. Yeah. There were a lot of things that just, fast. I'd have to look at the statement again. I didn't find it super compelling because I don't know, it started to blur together for me as kind of a lot of mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think for me it really helped explain that experience of listening to him, and as we got further and further into the testimony, yeah. I became more confused. Hmm. And yet I wanted to believe him. There were, I could see how it checked out to a certain degree, but there were so many questions, and this just really lays it out for me. And
the tense change mm-hmm. was a big one
exactly.
for me too.
The change going from to present tense instead of past tense. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting.
For me, there's definitely something to it, but I don't know if it's enough for me. I mean, I know we're not talking about convicting or finding someone innocent right now, but we will eventually. And I don't know if it's mm-hmm. if it's enough for me alone. You know, it's not enough for me alone. I personally feel like I need this stuff to lead to something more concrete mm-hmm. for me, which it seems to be the tool that it's used for. Right. And yes, are there all sorts of suspect things? Yeah, there are. There are a lot of suspect things in here. But that's, I guess, their job and the really hard work to find them. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, yes, here's a map, decipher it.
Yeah. I was saying how like confidence can be attractive and cockiness isn't. And the way that he talks about how she comes on to him sounds so cocky to me. And I think there were some tense changes mm-hmm. in that part too. Maybe not. But, you know, she was flirting and just making her the initiator of everything. Yeah. And
you said making. That doesn't mean that it could have very well gone that way.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like deflective language. It seemed like he was going out of his way to, she came on, you know, she poured the drink, mm-hmm. she did, you know, whenever it was anything that
she
could
was
be
into him,
potentially construed as possible evidence against him, he reversed it so that she was the subject and
yeah.
he was
and
the object.
And he says, you know, Riley and I always had a good time. Yeah. No, we don't know. That was an interesting place to insert
those words. He said you know
words.
Multiple times, and he
yep.
was editorializing so much of it,
yeah.
saying she basically wants
yeah, understandably,
me.
I was angry. Not understand. I mean, I guess.
Yeah. I actually think we had a really nice time. Actually, that's an interesting word too.
I say actually all the time.
Yeah, or like when he's
Jesus.
Like,
isn't it
I met with her
though.
What?
No, but actually, it's like, well, did you have a good time? Actually, I didn't. You know, isn't it more explaining if you're using actually?
They call it comparison language as opposed to something mm-hmm. else.
Mm-hmm. It indicates, I believe they said it indicates the fact that you've considered other possibilities.
That's right.
I guess the sentences I get most messed up on here are like just the most basic ones. There's like, I met with her at the coffee shop on Colonial Avenue. She's like, the word with indicates distance.
Mm.
What? Just,
how many times did Riley say with?
Shop.
How many times did Riley say actually? Oh, I don't know, because we don't know.
I do think certain pieces, certain flags are more compelling than others. I also think, and they said this earlier, that the longer the statement, the more information they have to draw from, obviously the more reliable the method. But the fact that, yeah, I agree. When I heard the with, I was like, yeah, well, how else would you say that? I met with so-and-so. But because they continue to find that kind of distance later on, though, and then there are so many other elements that sort of the change in tense and the jump in locations. Like, how did they get to the couch? Suddenly they're on mm-hmm. the couch.
But it took three tries to get to the apartment. He kept
yes.
going back,
yeah.
and then we got
yeah.
to Lila's, and then
it's like
to Riley's, and then we
time,
got to Riley's.
It's like almost like he was, well, my inference, to me, it felt like because he was remembering a new piece of thing that might, a new piece of information that might exonerate him. That he was like, oh yeah, but one other thing.
The repetition is very interesting.
And also, like, he was afraid to really get to the apartment.
Mm-hmm. Like, stalling.
Biding time.
He said, went to Riley's, I went to Riley's, and I got to Riley's, all in the same statement. With very few words in between.
And yet then completely drops off in his account of what happened immediately following the hookup. So we get there three
because
times.
Because he wasn't
then
given
what?
The opportunity to go into it. Suarez didn't do her job and ask the fucking question.
Well,
that's not his fault.
He wasn't being asked questions. He was asked to give a statement.
Sure.
He was free flying with it.
Absolutely. But that's the thing. Like, again, every story I tell, I don't recall every single detail. I say actually a lot. Like, if someone were to analyze my statements, good Lord. Like,
yeah. One difference, though, is I think we mentioned this before. It's like if there's something that's traumatic or, you know, even just out of the norm.
You forget.
No, you're actually more. You actually remember it better.
That's not how I do.
Most people do, though.
Yeah, there's studies on that. If it's a regular day, chances are you don't remember.
Right, but
everything.
If it was, say it was a snow day, you know, and it's like it rained hard that day, and I remember because I couldn't get to the car, and there'll be something a little bit weird, but there'll be things that, like, I know I mentioned this before, and because when I talked about it, I started saying I kind of started to say what you said. It's like when it's not. A specific event. It's not as yes, but if it's something that's heightened, like an attack or something like that, then you kind of remember every little detail.
Unless it's so traumatic that you
actually
will
then
black
block
out,
out
a memory.
Some of those details.
It's true too. That's also true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what he's recounting is not traumatic in
it
the
slightest.
Certainly
doesn't
so.
Seem to be to him. Right. Not to in him. His account. Mm-hmm. He does seem quite calm. But he does seem like he keeps hitting this reset button. He keeps sort of treading back. It seems like he's treading a bit carefully.
I would too if I was on trial or being investigated. I'm having a hard time even considering it as evidence. I mean, I know I keep going back to it. It's just hard for me to even do that.
Well, it's not evidence. It's,
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, to me, it's very biased. I feel like it's very unfair. And I feel like that's leading down a road where we're scrutinizing one person. And I know I've beat that into a wall, but I'm going to keep doing it because it's like, I don't even give a shit what that thing says. I really don't. I don't, because it's unfair.
I feel like we've all agreed that this alone is not, it's not enough for a conviction. Definitely not, right?
Right. Right.
No,
it's not.
Of course not.
But it does lead to, it is leading to other paths of inquiry, which I think corroborate Riley's story. Or at the very least, they certainly don't, they're not at odds with what she's saying, and they are calling into odds some of the things that Keith is saying.
But I think we already did. I mean, I just don't see how it leads us to anything new.
Yeah.
Because,
well,
like, we already, okay, this guy's accused of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. We already were maybe a little suspicious of what he was going to say. We were already going to look at what he said. And
how does his dodgy narrative, jumping all over the place in terms of time and just the vagueness of that, how does that check out with the phone records? How does that,
that's all stuff we probably would have looked at anyways.
It's also very suspect for me to think about the way his tone when he was recalling or making his statement versus the telephone call that we heard from Riley, that emotion. I mean, look at the two opposites. It's like you have calm man and you have Keith, what was that? Please call me and all that.
And a lady texting him incessantly for weeks and weeks and weeks.
He said she was warm and nice.
Yeah, that.
They always had a really good time.
And they always,
know.
Hey, maybe they did. You can't, come on now.
Well, she clearly didn't, based on that voicemail, based on the fact that she's accusing him of rape. So regardless of whether
it's a he said, she said situation, he's viewed it very differently.
Regardless of whether or not sexual assault actually happened, those emotional experiences are so far apart. I mean, he's claiming we're really good friends. I don't see how it's possible that two human beings could be in a situation and have that different...
Misread it that badly.
Yeah.
And they I don't think it's... Multiple accounts now that she was calling him for how long? Weeks?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And he just
shows
up.
He considers that. We always had a really good time.
Yeah.
To jump, that is what doesn't make sense to me.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm. He doesn't acknowledge any of the
well, I think he meant
in
the past
relationship.
They had a good...
Yeah. I'm just going to forget that last month.
Well, he said always.
Always.
And also that he's so concerned about what's going to happen with Lila afterwards and making sure that she doesn't tell anyone, probably because he doesn't want to know, he doesn't want the new girl to know that now he's moved on in his own other way. He's just trying to cover up his tracks.
It wasn't clear when he said, the statement analyst noted that. It wasn't clear when he left the coffee shop and he said, well, I left Lila. If he meant just I left the physical place or if I left her as in dumped her.
My interpretation.
I thought it was he dumped her.
Me too.
Yeah.
But we don't know for certain. And then,
why would he be so concerned?
Exactly. And then I called that interpretation to question when he then later referenced her and said, yeah, you know, I don't want to mess things up with her. So I'm like, well, wait, what?
She already messed him up.
I took it as he just left the coffee shop. Like, I left Lila and I went to someone.
Well, I'm sure, yeah, because it's like, I'm sure it wasn't resolved like that. You know, I mean, it maybe he change of heart.
Think about what just happened.
Think how confusing
she just told him he cheated on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not going to be like, okay, I'm just going to walk this off. You know?
Well, yeah. Well, sometimes do that.
People work through those things.
When my husband gets upset.
He was understandably upset,
he said.
No,
when my husband gets upset, he says,
but I'm not the kind of guy to just yell and shout.
That's just how it goes. You can't sit there and blame somebody a rape on just their personal reactions to a story. That's really shitty.
Yeah, but what doesn't make sense is that within this same testimony, I mean, yeah, that's time apart. Him, like, deciding to leave the coffee shop, and then him later after being with Riley being like, I don't want to mess things up with her. In his statement now, he's saying two contradictory, seemingly to me, contradictory things when he's saying, I left Lila, and then like a few seconds later, at the end of his narrative, I didn't want to mess, you know,
that's exactly what I think he's saying. I left Lila, I left Lila.
After I found out that she cheated on me, it sounded to me like it was over. They were done.
I would have said, I mean, then to me, he would have said, she and I broke up and then I left.
I felt like he was just reaching for an excuse for why he would leave that note. You know, don't tell anyone because I don't want to mess things up with, you know.
The person who just cheated on
Yeah.
you. Things are messed up.
Yeah. Felt like a reach.
Me too.
Covering tracks.
Science is supposed to be the most incontrovertible form of evidence there is, but that isn't the case. It isn't even the case in day-to-day life. Science can include the most hotly debated subjects there are. Psychiatry, environmental study, Eastern versus Western medicine. My science may not be your science, but does that statement even make sense? Shouldn't science prevail beyond belief? And if not about science, what hope do we have of agreeing? Next time on Deliberations.
She's crying out for the man to stop. Violent, non-consensual pornography. Was it a crass thing to say? Yes.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast. Jury. Lindsay Purcell. Ross Denyer. Lindsay Fishkin. Kevin Bryan. Drew Phillips. And Lindsay Mallard. News and Courtroom, Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Lindsay Rousseau, Teresa Moore, and Guy Caraturo. Editorial advisement by Jessa Nicholson Getz from the incredible podcast Getting Off. On Monday, we're speaking to a professional statement analyst, Rick Whitehead, about the science and real-world application of statement analysis. Stay tuned for that, and we'll see you Monday.